Ago, the island of Guam stood peacefully, helpless and undefended. Its strategic location made it vulnerable in a Japanese-dominated ocean. It would become a target, caught in the crossfire of a war that had no equal in its devastation and its brutality. While Japanese pilots dropped bombs on Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, Guam, which stood east of the international dateline, was attacked on December 8th. The frightening thunder of bombs exploded on the island as Japanese dive bombers attacked. The indigenous Chamorro people, who had already suffered 3 centuries of colonial domination, were no match for the repeated bombings and 5,000 shock troops that swarmed ashore. The raising of the flag of the rising sun on Guam began 3.5 years of Japanese occupation, 3.5 years of terror, death, indignity, and horror for the Chamorros. Once on Guam, the Japanese captured the Chamorros and forced them to dig caves, build roads, and carry their supplies. Concentration camps were built to contain the villagers where they lived under harsh conditions. Men, women, and children were forced to grow food for the Japanese troops and were given little for themselves. People died from malnutrition, lack of medical care, torture, beheadings, and mass executions. During the final days of the Japanese occupation period of Guam during World War II, and immediately prior to the recapture of Guam by U.S. forces on July 21, 1944, the Japanese command made a decision to annihilate all of the residents of the southern village of Morizo. Some of the worst mass executions of Chamorros took place here. As U.S. forces neared Guam, Japanese behavior deteriorated into a reign of terrorism across the island. Women were repeatedly beaten and raped, public beheadings and bludgeonings occurred, and approximately 500 Chamorros were killed due to atrocities, far more than the number killed in the crossfire of combat. But nowhere on the island was the suffering and needless killing felt more than in the tiny village of Morizo on the southern coast of Guam. Today I'm in the village of Morizo, standing next to a monument that's been placed in memory of those who died in massacres at the caves of Tinta and Faja. These people once lived in peace along the shores of this seaside village where they fished and farmed for their livelihood. Their names, etched in stone, are a silent testament to the grim reality that in wartime, all too often, it is the families caught in the crossfire of war who suffer most. The senseless and unnecessarily brutal execution of these innocent people has not been forgotten. The bodies of these martyrs who were murdered in the caves are still in the caves on the far side of this ridge. Sadly, they were left behind, never to be rejoined with their friends and families. The needless loss of lives in this brutal mass execution and the cruelty to which his own wife was subjected resulted in a retaliatory effort led by just one man, Jose Soriano Regis, and a small gallant band of loyal followers. Angered by the killings, Mr. Regis refused to accept the injustices inflicted upon his people. Though pitifully underarmed and with few people to help him, his raw courage and leadership led to a successful uprising against the Japanese. His brave deeds, carried out in the face of insurmountable odds and almost certain death, saved the lives of many and liberated his village from the imperial forces. Join me as we visit Mr. Regis at his home in Morizo today, where he recounts his remarkable story. Hello, Mr. Regis. Let's begin by turning the clock back. Over 50 years ago, during the Japanese occupation of Guam, in your village of Morizo, where you and your family once lived a peaceful life, the year was 1944. On July 10th, something happened here in Morizo. Can you tell me what happened on that day?
On July 10th?
Yes.
My wife told me that it was to be executed with a couple of ladies. So that made me worry about it.
Yes, made you worry about her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that made you angry. What was your wife's name?
Dolores Cruz Regis.
Mm-hmm. So the women were held by the Japanese and your wife was one of them that was threatened, is that right?
Yes.
And when she told you about it, you got really angry and upset?
Yeah, I'm really upset.
Yeah.
I first told her I can do it right there, but mm-hmm. can go and see what I can do, but it's too fresh, so do I just a better way.
That's right. Well, were the women finally set free and they didn't hurt them? The Japanese let them go?
No, the reason why they let it go because they dope fight with the U.S. plant on top of the place where they are.
Oh.
So that's why they let it go.
Yeah.
And they tell them to go inside the building.
So if the dogfight hadn't happened, then they might have been executed.
Oh. I think so.
She must have been so frightened. Is this when you decided or came up with a plan that you wanted to do something about the Japanese?
Since that time, I start thinking what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
But then we are... They took that 15 people, I mean 30 people to Tintin, I mean,
Tinta?
Tinta.
Mm-hmm.
Tinta.
Right.
And,
yeah.
I'm in Ghana working for the Japanese people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm working on heavy equipment operator.
Okay.
And when... On the 15th of...
15th of July?
July.
Uh-huh.
The Japanese airplane stripped down the airfield, you know, so everybody's gone. You have to go.
Oh, so you were running from...
Running from...
Aganya
to Maurice.
Right.
Yeah.
That's about 20 miles, isn't it?
It looks like.
Yeah.
But I don't feel it.
Yeah, you were running. Oh, but you were not injured. You were not injured.
No, I'm not injured.
But you made it back to your village.
I made it back to Marisa. I get to Marisa and it was 11 o'clock in the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
So at that time when I get home, my wife told me that the Japanese ordered all the people in Marisa to go to one place.
Yes.
To the place in Alilin, so that they're gonna, I don't know what they're gonna do, but that's what my wife told me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I told my wife, go ahead, take care of the children, and I'll get the younger one that I can take care of you, my daughter.
Yeah.
So, we stayed there until maybe 4:30 when we started going back to the place where it's supposed to be. When I get back there, before I get to the place where I'm supposed to stop, you know, because my family in there,
yeah.
I heard about 3 shots from the ocean, and I thought it's from the ship, but it's from Tinta, where the Japanese killing the Marisa people, the 30 people of Marisa. I don't know whether there's 30 people that they're gonna kill. I don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the time when I know it.
But you heard the sound of the explosions,
the explosion
of the hand grenades.
And I thought it's a ship, ship, what do you call ship, do the shooting inside the island.
Mm-hmm.
But not, no. That's the thing to place.
So, on that day, on July 15th, the Japanese gathered up the villagers, 30 of the villagers, and what did they do?
They throw anchor nets on that place in Tinta.
Yeah, in the cave at Tinta.
In the cave at Tinta.
And they executed 30 villagers, and you heard those shots.
I heard those shots. But there are some of them survived.
Mm-hmm. Some of them survived.
Yeah.
So how did you find out about what had actually happened in the caves? Who told you about that?
Oh, my sister is cooking in my cousin's house,
mm-hmm.
ranch,
mm-hmm.
house or ranch. And my cousin whispered to her that the people, even the husband of my sister was killed already.
The husband of your sister was killed in the cave?
That's what he told my sister.
Oh.
So since that time, I really go back and I always do something to what I can do, you know, and think something.
You're thinking that you want to do something. You're thinking of a plan now.
Yeah.
Okay, now some people did survive in the cave. Were there, how many people survived?
I think they survived. I don't know exactly how many survived, but there are some survived.
Okay.
And they run away.
I think the record shows that there were 14 of those 30 people. Now, they weren't killed by the hand grenades, but the Japanese went back to the caves to see if the people were dead, and the people that survived, did they hide?
They bayoneted them.
Yeah, they bayoneted them, I see. And the people who survived, they hid under the bodies of others?
Yes, some of them that are seen run away, you know, yet.
Uh-huh.
Because some are injured, but those people, the first people that when my sister knew that they're killing the people,
mm-hmm.
that's not her because it's maybe he's in the bottom of the cave.
Yes.
That's why it doesn't hurt and get out easy.
Yes, because they couldn't come out until nighttime, is that right?
Yeah.
Because the
Lucky
Japanese...
Lucky, it's a lot of rain.
It's rain
that time.
Yeah.
And the Japanese run away from the place where they are, you know. So they go to a building, to a ranch.
Yes.
For shelter. So that's why a lot of them that are not really hurt come out and
able
run.
To come out. So now it's the following morning of July 16th, after the massacre in the Tinta Cave, and what happened that day?
On that day, you know, before 12 o'clock, they come again and they ask for people to help deliver stuff for the Japanese to the north.
Okay.
And they select again another 30.
Another 30 people.
30 people to go to work for to delivering the Japanese stuff to the north.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a wrong idea.
So there's another cave involved now. This is the Faha Cave?
This cave is Faha Cave.
Uh-huh.
They were told to go inside because the Japanese, the plane coming.
The planes are coming.
Yeah.
The American planes are coming.
Coming. So what they did, they go inside and they got killed by the Japanese.
The same thing again.
The same thing. And
another 30 people.
Another 30 people. And that's
died.
The 30. 30 of them died.
And no survivors.
No survivors.
Yeah. So now there are 46 Mariso citizens who have died this way in these caves.
Yeah.
And now later that day, there was a group of villagers, and they were forced to do what? Were you moving the supplies somewhere?
Yeah, we moved the supplies from the place where we all stay the night.
Yes.
We moved it to the jungle. So the first place we stopped is Tingtinghanum.
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 So you're moving Japanese supplies.
Supplies.
Oh, you and your family too?
Yeah, everybody. Everybody got to move.
You were all carrying heavy things?
No, not really heavy, but just stuff that
like the Japanese needed. Okay, so you got there about what time of day at Tingtinghanum?
Tingtinghanum, we get over there in the evening.
In the evening, so you marched much of that day.
Yeah.
Okay. On the July the 18th, what did the Japanese soldiers start doing on that day?
Digging? No, we stayed in Tingtinghanum for one night.
For one night, okay.
And then the morning, we have to move to Atati.
Atati.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where the concentration camp was?
That's where the concentration camp and the... So we move again. So when we moved to Atati, there's about four Japanese or five or six Japanese guarding the Tingtinghanum place, because that's where they are, where they have their belonging.
Oh yeah.
So we moved to Atati. Mm-hmm. We start carrying the stuff again and to take it up to Atati.
Mm-hmm.
Then we turn in the when we get to Atati, everybody is got to get up again. I have to stay on around the camp.
You have to stay at the concentration camp there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I always wanna be near this Japanese thing, you know, so that I can hear what they're doing.
You're trying to listen.
I wanna get what they're trying to do. So the first night there in Atati, the Japanese asked for some people to help them they're all ladies, girls. They want girls that will come and massage them.
The young girls.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. By night time, you know, and then the girls left. And they told these girls to take a shower and they come back again the next night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the next night is the 19th.
Okay.
The next night is the 19th. So I know that the Japanese people, when they want to enjoy themselves, the banzai, you know.
The banzai. Yeah.
And that means trouble later.
Yeah, they only celebrate the banzai when they're committed to battles and death.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, what about this hole?
This hole?
Did they dig a hole? A big hole? Now?
Yeah, there's a big hole, and it's big for people.
So they made all the workers dig a big hole.
Yeah.
And what did they tell you
that's for the dog?
For the dog.
Yeah.
Oh.
But that dog is a lot of dogs to be buried there.
So you realized what
that it's time for the banzai.
Time for the banzai, and you think that hole is for
the people of Mauritius.
For you and the people of Mauritius.
The rest of the people of Mauritius.
So you're running out of time, and what about your plan? Did you start your plan?
My plan is to see what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
Is to. So when they told us to go back and pick up the stuff for them, the Japanese,
mm-hmm.
because they're gonna have banzai banzai that night.
Yes.
So I. We don't go back to pick up the trash, the stuff, we go back to kill them.
You go back to kill them?
So that we can get some arms.
Did you have anyone to help you?
No, there's only there's six people that's supposed to help me there.
Well, did you have trouble getting people to help you?
No, because these six people already, I asked them, we have mm-hmm. to get together.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them refusing because they want to run away. And so I told them, if you run away, it's no use for you people. We have to stick together and help and get to help me because I need help.
So you were giving them courage and giving them a reason and telling them that they must.
It's just the same if you leave. Now, maybe you're going to get killed.
Yes.
If you don't live, maybe we fight and we can save our people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So,
so now
when we left, the after the camp to get the stuff for the that's the last load.
Mm-hmm.
The last load was to, we make a first load already. But we just stop on the hills. When I found all the people of Marisa in the hills are waiting.
Mm-hmm.
They're tired, you know, because they have moved things. So a lot of them, I see a place where they have food, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'd like to have some of that food. So when I get some of that food, you know, with the Japanese,
mm-hmm.
the people say, no, is he going to kill us? No, never mind about killing. Go ahead, help yourself. I give it all to the people.
Oh.
I get the food from the guy that's taking care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, come on, have. It's ours here now.
Okay.
We have to go ahead and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, so you've got food for the people from these soldiers. Now, tell me about this Springfield rifle. Did you have a rifle hidden somewhere?
I have a rifle, but that's the rifle is back on my ranch.
On your ranch?
I don't have time to go
you
and get it.
You don't have time to
get it.
Yeah, but this is a rifle that you had hidden.
In the mango tree.
In the mango tree. Okay,
yeah.
And so each morning, what would you do with the rifle?
I'm just like, I think, putting up the flag.
Putting up the
flag? Lower it down.
Because it was on a rope. You had it tied on a rope.
Yeah.
And you take this rifle and do what? Send it up in the tree?
Tree, where they couldn't see it because there's a lot of leaves, you know.
And then that you'd hide it when, in the morning?
No, in the morning, I put it up before sunrise.
Yeah.
So in the evening again, I take it down.
Take it down, and keep it where?
Near my bedside.
Close to your bedside. Well, so in a way, the rifle was like a flag, wasn't it? It was like a symbol of freedom every day. You raise it and lower it. Sign of hope somewhere.
Yeah.
Wow. So that was something that you had on your ranch.
Yeah.
And what would the Japanese have done to you if they knew you had that rifle?
They would kill my family.
They would kill your
family. I know they would kill my family. But I still have one gun, play gun.
Mm-hmm.
So if people say that I have a gun, and mm-hmm. Japanese come, I'll show him that one.
You were very, very smart.
That's
you
what
really were thinking all the time.
Yeah.
I think that's miraculous that you were able to keep your family protect them and
yeah.
be thinking about the people in the village.
And the Japanese where they let the people work is close, it belonged to us, the land.
The land was yours.
Yeah.
But the Japanese made you work.
Yeah, they made us all work.
Made you work.
Everybody got to work.
Grow food.
Grow food, vegetable, mm-hmm. Everything.
So, now your plan is coming along, and you rounded up six boys?
Not six boys already.
Okay, and they were going to help you.
Yeah.
Now. And so, there were two boys that were first to help you. What were their names?
John Angauta and Pat Tyron.
Pat Tyron. So, when did the fighting start? What did you all do?
No, these four, you know, these four refused because they're afraid and they want to run away. I said, I even talked to them, if you run away, you don't have a chance.
So now, I think that you all were very brave to do this. Now, you told me earlier that you were the first person to go after a Japanese guard. You
yeah,
were first.
That's right.
And where did you hit him?
I hit him on his skull, on his, what do you call this?
Forehead? Yes. What did you hit him with?
I hit him with my hand.
With your hand? What happened to him?
He bowed forward. I thought he was going to wrestle.
Uh-huh.
But not wrestle. He's already unconscious, so I hit him again. I made a hole on his forehead.
Crushed his forehead. Yeah. And then Jose and Pat, what did they do?
They're battling with the rest because they're hitting on the wrong side. They hit him on the arm, they hit him on the legs.
Mm-hmm. But the guard fell down unconscious now,
yeah.
right? And you all had to leave, but you told Pat and Jose to do something.
Yeah, the rest of the boys, because they all gathered with us that time, all the six.
Mm-hmm.
They come and they don't have a chance to run.
So the Japanese guards that had been wounded, were they dead?
They're dead because I tell these boys to make sure that the Japs are dead.
Make
so
sure they're dead.
When I went back to check where they are, they're all hanging on a split. And
hanging?
They're all split on their belly.
They're hanging from the tree?
Tree.
And they had their stomach split to
yeah.
make sure they were dead.
They're dead.
Because if they hadn't been dead, then they would have come and gotten you
yeah.
again. Yeah. So you made sure that they were dead. So then another Japanese guard approached you and you had a gun, right?
Yeah.
No,
after we finished killing these Japanese on the Ting Ting Hanum
mm-hmm.
place,
yeah.
we went forward to where the trial, and I watched the other people that
oh,
are coming.
On the trail, coming on the trail.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what happened?
There's a Japanese come up first on the place, because that place you have to try to jump up a little, because this is about maybe four feet high, the road to the other road, because the road is higher on this side and slower down here. You have to hold yourself and jump up to get up.
Is that where you were hiding?
That's where we're at.
You were hiding.
I'm hiding right behind the, what do you call the behind the tree, you know, is the name is...
The banyan tree.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the first time you get up, I wanted to go up further so I can make sure that I hit him right.
Yes.
So when I shoot at this Japanese, there's two jump up in the in the back, and the bullet of one bullet from the gun goes straight to the Japanese, to the two Romanian. One in the hands and go through to the stomach to the other one. So three people there, the Japanese die already.
Right, so now you've killed several of the Japanese, four guards that you killed and took their weapons?
Yeah, we took their weapons.
Took their weapons.
So we got a weapon now.
Right, and so now I believe you found about 50 or 60 people of your group that were helping you now,
yeah.
Is that right, about 50 or 60
yeah.
people? And you gave them what to fight with? What did they have to fight with?
I told some boys, you know, that I can go out with a machete and, get a food of... They're in the China, you know, so that they can hit somebody.
So you just had some sticks, really?
And yeah.
And rocks, maybe?
No.
No rocks,
no
just
rock.
Some
sticks? Just sticks.
And those were your weapons that you were
That's
fighting
for the
Japanese?
And the gun that we have.
And the gun.
With the four Japanese,
yes.
I got.
So you weren't exactly overly armed, I guess.
No.
No.
We're not really over.
Well, you came to where? To some Japanese along the river that were bathing? What happened there?
Oh, some of the boys, you know, throw rocks to these people.
Throwing rocks. Okay.
Because I'm not there already, but the first bunch of boys that I told to go forward, because I don't want to be in front, I want to be in the back, because they refuse, you cannot. If maybe if I'm in the front, they all run away.
Yes.
Run away from me.
Right.
I always try to get them to keep
go.
Them to keep going.
To go.
Yeah.
Yes. And fight.
Because it's too late if we don't do it. When the Japanese get their portion, that's no time for us. That's why I say.
So you were the brave one, and few more who were willing to help you do this. One of the Japanese in the river, I believe, fired at you. Is that correct?
No.
No.
The one in the camp. In the camp.
Uh-huh.
Got a gun and get out from the camp.
Oh.
Because that's where the Japanese gun is, on the camp. So this Japanese guy come out and, I'm teaching the boys, you know, the way to shoot on the gun.
Uh-huh.
They fired me.
They fired
It's just right, I was right next to my ear.
Right by your ear?
Yeah, my ear.
So
I look at this, you know, where the fire came from.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to, because Japanese gun, like, it's just like the old American rifle. You have to cock it and push it out again. So before I cock it, he's cocking it and trying to shoot at me again. I aim him and I shoot him right on the...
Oh, thank goodness.
On the broad place so I can...
Yeah, you hit him in the chest.
Hit him on the chest so he can weaken up.
Yeah. That was close.
That's
where you almost died. Were you not afraid of dying in all this?
That day, I'm not afraid.
So your group of volunteers and recruits were growing in number, and you all proceeded north. So, armed with your clubs and swords, and you must have had a few rifles and some hand grenades that you maybe didn't even know how to use very well, right? You just had them.
We went to guard, you know, after that, and then we went out, you know, to a place, and close to the door we have to guard. those people doesn't know anything, so I don't get mad about it because I know.
Yeah, they're just.
I understand.
So you surprised Japanese guards at the concentration camp, and you went on to a supply depot, and so now by now you've killed quite a few Japanese, I guess.
Yeah.
Any idea how many so far?
Oh, there are a lot of Japanese.
A lot of Japanese. On July the 19th, I believe there were two boys that came along with a note. They were carrying a note. What happened?
No, and these two boys, you know, because I always be the last one in the place where we are. Mm-hmm. I want everybody to move up. So I transferred the moving to another area.
Mm-hmm.
So that in case something is going to come, they won't find us.
Yes.
So these two boys from Iran, they came and they said they're going to give the note to the Japanese people in Marisu Cemetery.
Oh.
So I know already there are some Japanese over there, guard. That's the guard that killed the 30 of the Marisu people.
Oh, he was the guard that killed the 30?
30.
Oh, okay.
That killed the 30 of people from...
Yes.
It's close to the cemetery. Because that night I went out and looked for them and I found them over there. Because I go out at night myself.
Scouting around. And getting information as to where the Japanese are.
Yeah.
What they're planning to do.
Yeah. So that's the only way we can do things right.
Yeah.
So
you took these boys?
I took these boys, you know.
As prisoners?
No, I don't tell them that they are prisoners, but for me, I took them as prisoners.
Okay.
So I told the gardener that guarding all the people of Mauricio in one area,
mm-hmm.
I told them, you don't have to get these boys, go back to Iran or go along with what they're trying to, their plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know already that this plan is to get some Japanese soldier to group to take care of us.
Yeah, so you know that the Japanese are planning to kill all the villagers.
Yeah.
That's their plan.
That's their plan.
And if these boys have gotten away, they could tell them where you
where,
were.
Where we are.
And so did you tell your friends to shoot the
boys? The one that taking care of the people, you know, because I got some maybe about 4 or 5 guys, you know, stay there with their guns to take care of the people. Because I always go around.
Mm-hmm. So you're organizing everyone and making sure that the people are safe.
Yeah.
And as you move from place to place, you're making sure that you leave clues for the Japanese so they can't find you. So did you tell them to shoot these young boys if they tried to get away?
I told them already, don't let them go away. If they want, tell them that we are ordered to shoot you if you go away. So these two guys stay forever and we go to Agate together.
You went to Agate?
Agate together where the invasion came in, you know.
Mm-hmm, where the invasion came, right. So something happened that night. You sent some of your men somewhere.
I called my brother-in-law because my brother-in-law is the one that taking care of the Japanese fishing.
Uh-huh.
So he got an outrigger. And the outrigger can take about 6 people to go out in rough water, I know it. Because I know how outrigger, because I've been fishing too.
Mm-hmm.
So I told them to take these 5 people and go to the ship and tell the pilot of the ship, the commander, that the Japanese are moving north.
Okay, all right.
So
they left that night in the outrigger canoe.
Yeah, that's on the 19th.
On the 19th, and who was the man that you
made responsible?
Yeah.
Tony Leon Guerrero.
Okay, and he had inside information about the Japanese, perhaps. Because he had been taking care of boats for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And
he's been fishing for the Japanese.
Yeah. And you told him to tell the Americans where the Japanese are.
Tell the captain of the ship or the admiral that the Japanese are moving north.
Moving north. Okay. So they took off at night in this outrigger canoe. There were six of your men.
And that night, you know, the tide is really low.
Oh.
And they have to carry the canoe maybe 300, 400 feet from the where the canoe is hit. They have to carry it out to the where they can put it down and start the engine.
I understand. So they took the canoe over the shallow areas and once they were in the water, they went out to Cocos Island. Cocos Island. About how far is Cocos Island away, do you know?
Oh,
approximately, maybe?
From where they start is not too far because it's closer to Cocos Island because it's on the side of Maurice.
Okay. So when they got there, were there any Japanese on the island?
No, they are really scared because there's something like a machine gun, you know, that the Japanese put out.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah.
The Japanese put out something in Cocos Island.
Yeah, it was coconut trunks or something that made to look like a gun, to fool the Americans, huh? Oh, so they were really afraid.
Afraid. Yeah. So they're not even talking.
But they're being really quiet.
Quiet and try to get out. So when they get out in one place and they found that, they went to the other side and go down further.
Mm-hmm. They're being very careful.
Careful.
Yes. And, but they stopped on the island to get some coconuts?
Yeah, they stopped.
They needed some.
Most of them get coconuts.
Needed something to drink.
Drink and eat, you know, the coconut.
Yes. All right, so then they left Cocos Island.
They left Cocos Island to the ship.
And went out into the ocean.
Ocean. The first ship that they saw, they keep on going, the ship moving to get away from them.
Really?
So they really go out to the rough water.
Oh, they really have to go.
They have to go, but they keep on going. So this ship that go out, the first ship that they saw, keep on going out and they never turn back. So they wait for another ship because that's the way when they go to Agate for the invasion.
The Americans were starting to arrive in Guam. And the ships were patrolling offshore then?
No, they're not patrolling. They are going down to Agate.
Going on the way to Agate.
To Agate.
For the landing, for the marine
so
invasion.
So it goes this way.
Oh, yes, right.
So
the ship picked them up.
The next ship picked them up.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still, they get scared because there's a lot of machine gun pointing them down.
Oh my goodness. And when they got on the ship then they told
the captain of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And they got welcome.
And so they told the Americans where the Japanese were. Right? And then they led the US Marines as scouts. Guides.
Yeah,
they led the Marines through Agate and
Mariso.
So these people really played an important role in helping the US Marines during the invasion. Okay, and in the meanwhile, you had stayed with your people, is that right?
Yeah.
You were taking care of your people.
Now we are moving to Agate.
Now you're Moving to Agate also, okay.
After there, we did so a couple of Marines came with some Gomenian, you know. That's the time when we moved to Agate. Mm-hmm.
And, but you had taken your family to a safe place in the jungle for the time being?
Yeah, my family is there in one place, mm-hmm. night and day.
And you had to go out still
go out.
And looking for Japanese?
No, we're guarding the...
Guarding the place.
I got some people and
okay.
That's why I said I know I trade my cow for a box of dynamite.
You traded your cow for a box
yeah,
of dynamite?
Because that's what the... it used to be a commissioner of Sumai or something like...
Okay.
Yeah.
Commissioner, and
because I know they went to the ship, you know, and they stole some dynamite.
Uh-huh.
I know.
And
I said, will you please trade me some dynamite or buy it? He said, no, I'll give you a cow or a cow if you want. So he chose cow.
So you traded your cow for dynamite.
One cow for dynamite. So I got more ammunition.
Now you've got more ammunition.
And I know how to fix that up good.
How did you know how to use that dynamite?
I used to work with them, you know, because I work for the Navy for a time, and the Navy are doing it for the war. What
for,
time?
For the Cabras.
For Cabras. So I...
Okay. So you knew how to use it.
I'm working with the people that destroying the rocks, you know, and the Cabras.
Yes.
And
so
I
knew.
I knew it.
Might very well.
And those people are all right, because the boss of the Cabras dynamite people, I know it's a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm taking care of the road from Cabras out to where the ship come in.
Okay.
That's my job.
That was your work.
That's my work.
Yes. So now you have two boxes of dynamite, and were you hiding them somewhere?
No, I had them on my ranch, but it's no use.
Oh.
So I
was
don't
back
use
on
it.
The ranch and you couldn't get to it.
Couldn't get to it.
Oh boy, I bet you wanted to though, didn't you?
Oh yeah.
You could really have used that dynamite.
Because dynamite, you know, I can use it and it's just like a gun.
It's almost like a hand grenade, eh? Can you throw it?
Yeah, hand grenade is only about 6 seconds.
6 seconds on a hand grenade?
Hand grenade. And dynamite, you can go less than 6 seconds.
Less?
Or more.
Uh-huh.
Or a group.
Ah, I
group
see.
Of people. If you got a big chunk of diamond, that's
yes.
for a group.
Oh my goodness. You could have really done some defending
yeah.
with that dynamite.
Yeah,
yes.
I know it's worth it for me because that's what I'm doing right there, is taking care.
So your dynamite was back on the ranch, but you still had a few guns and when the U.S. forces invaded to liberate the island, the scouts that you had sent out were helping them, and in the meanwhile, you were also fighting with the villagers in the jungles for the last few Japanese
scattered around.
You were going up in the jungles and hills,
yeah.
trying to find them and getting them out. Whew. So, you know, Marizo, you liberated the village of Marizo, and it was the only village on Guam that was actually liberated by its own people.
Yeah.
And you led those people and organized those people. And it sounds like in some cases gave them the courage and the determination to stand up and
yeah,
fight.
Yeah, fight. That's right.
That's incredible. Were you afraid, not afraid to die?
No,
what
I'm not afraid.
What did you think?
I'm not afraid because I like to save the people.
You wanted to save the people. That was your primary thought, was
yeah.
to save your people. Well, today, the heroic citizens who fought with you in the face of almost certain death, and you saved the lives of untold number of Chamorros, you and the people who helped you are no strangers to honor. I noticed that in the paperwork that you gave me in resolutions adopted by the Guam legislature in 1972 and again in 1989, they expressed recognition and commendation, and I quote them as saying, "To the loyal, patriotic, and heroic band of Guamanians, organized and led by Jose Regis, assisted by the following people: Vicente Mano, Patricio Tajiron,
yeah.
Nicholas Chargpualaf, Juan Naputi,
yeah.
Jose Nanguata,
yeah.
and Mariano Nanguata,
yeah.
gallant residents of Marizo who released their fellow Guamanians from the Atite concentration camp," end quote. And now you were saying that those, out of those people, those who went to Cocos Island and assisted as scouts and guides for the U.S. Marines, what were their names?
Tony Longuerrero.
Mm-hmm.
Down there?
Yeah.
Tony Longuerrero. Mantui. That's the nickname.
Mantui. That was his nickname?
Yeah, Mantui.
Okay. Who else?
Sir Basinas.
Right. Is it Juan Mino?
Juan. John.
Oh, Juan Mino.
That's John.
I'm sorry.
John Mino.
Okay.
Joaquin Manalise, Jose Torres, and Juan Cruz Banjo. So these two here, Joe Torres, is
okay.
working at the
University.
University of Guam. You saw him?
I gave him a letter yesterday.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr.
And Juan Cruz Banjo is still alive.
They're the only two of all these
he's
people that
alive.
Are still alive that helped you.
And I like them to be recognized.
To be recognized.
No. Not later.
And not later.
Before the side.
Right. Right. And so they will be. And so they will be if I can do anything about it. From this brave group of men, Dr. Jose M. Torres and Juan Cruz Banjo are still alive. Further honors have been presented to Mr. Regis by the governor's office for his valor and heroism. Other organizations expressing appreciation are the Guam Civilian Scouts, the JCs, the Chamber of Commerce, and numerous military commemorative ceremonies throughout the years. 54 years after the end of World War II and the liberation of Guam, Mr. Regis modestly recounts his actions during the Japanese occupation. His slight frame, kind eyes, and soft voice belie the enormous bravery that once came from within him. His gentle demeanor seems to convey an outlook of calm resolve. At age 78, Pops Regis remembers when he was only 20 years old and rose up with his Springfield rifle to free his people. It is with certainty that they will remember him. Thank you, Mr. Regis, and I'll leave you in peace. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.